Mmm, that was good. You boys like your pie?
Yeah, it's delicious.
See, mmm, yum.
And you know what? It is not only delicious, but it's also utilitarian.
How is that so, Rashi?
Well, watch like this. You take the little chocolate pieces, and then if you aim just right, people think you're flinging poo.
Rashi, that's horrible.
Yeah. Here, watch this. Hey, look at that old man right
no,
there.
No, put
totally
that down.
Totally unsuspecting. No. And totally without hair.
Put that down.
Look at, there he goes.
Oh, what the hell is that? Mister, I'm sorry.
It's
just chocolate pie.
Rashi, no,
I'm doing it too. It's feces.
No, it's not feces. Simply just stop that. I'm sorry. Boys, get in the car. Come on, get out of here. I'm not taking you boys out again.
I'll take a piece to go.
This is the podcast formerly known as Almost Live with Paul and Misty, because all our branding says Radio Rashi on it. We are now hereby changing the name to Radio Rashi.
I wonder who is responsible for that.
That was you, Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
So that is Ezra. I am Paul Dini, and
I'm
with
me, Misty Lee, and we have a special guest over on the sofa today, Miss Emily.
I finally got a mic. Hi, everybody.
She paid her dues. We made her come in, and she had to do a couple chores and stuff. And we said, now she's got the microphone, but she had to work extra hard to get it turned on.
Babysit Rashi, and that was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's lucky that we were able to, you know, cut the duct tape off you that one time.
Yeah.
Taped you to the ceiling.
I'm real sorry about the tar, too.
So I guess the title of the show should be Radio Rashi with Paul and Misty or something like that. Or
I
just
don't know. Whatever
Radio
it
Rashi.
Says in iTunes is what it's called.
Okay, Radio Rashi it is. So the Radio Rashi podcast. There we go. Give the kid top billing. I don't care. He likes it.
Yeah.
We call it Super Ego on the microphone. That would be a good title.
Yes, it would be. But I guess we'll just go with Radio Rashi.
Well, I understand you love him more than you love me.
Yeah, that's right, Super Ika.
That's not true. We love you both the same. Super Ika, Super Ika.
Actually, Super Ika, I love you more than I love Rashi.
Well, don't let Rashi hear you say that.
I don't care if he hears.
I love Hobart.
Oh, Hobart's wonderful. Come here, Hobart. Come here. Yeah, he's a good boy. Yeah, he usually just curls up by the fireplace and gnaws on the leg of a child that he managed to, you know, pull down after school or something. We're losing kids in the neighborhood right and left. We've got to start doing something about that.
So you were talking about kind of taking it easy this evening, which is a marked difference to our Saturday.
Yeah. We had kind of a wacky Saturday. And maybe we should just use that as a subject of what we'll talk about this week.
I mean, just want to tell them what we did?
Yeah. Saturday was just sort of this weird night where we had gone out to see, well, you know, it started off easily enough. Like every month you do, one Saturday a month, you do a show at Second City.
At the vaudeville show they have there, yeah. The Gold Star Vaudeville Variety Hour.
Yes. And you usually perform there as Princess
Magic.
Princess Magic, yeah. Adding a bit of class to the place with your magic act and everything.
Princess Magic puts the ass in class.
Yes, she does.
As my great-grandmother was wont to say.
Yeah. And you were rehearsing all week, and you would come up with some new routines and gags and everything, which you had tried out all weekend. I was very excited to go and watch the show and also video record it and for your comedy reel. And it didn't work out quite that way. I mean, you did it, and and you got it recorded, right? But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that went fine. It was just the whole getting there that turned into a giant fiasco. I mean, usually Second City is about 20 minutes from our house. You go up over a hill, and traffic is usually tight. But if you give yourself about 20 minutes, you're gonna make it. And the call time is really loose, so I'm never late. You know, no matter, as long as I'm there before showtime, they're just thrilled because Princess Magic doesn't really need to get gorgeous. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you can take like a paint roll and put on her makeup, kind of.
I don't even need a mirror. I really don't. It's actually better if I don't use one. But what happened was, we got on the road, and we got there fine, but about two blocks before we hit Second City, it was like someone dropped a bomb and traffic exploded. I mean, it was just, there were cars everywhere. It was like there was a magnet on Hollywood Boulevard. It was drawing every car from the, you know, 5 mile radius to it.
It was Hollywood Saturday night, and it happens occasionally. It's usually always crowded there, but for whatever reason, man, Saturday night in Hollywood, it's been that way for years, but it seems to have gotten worse. Where Hollywood is a place where everybody has to be. Everybody flocks to it to go to parties, to go to clubs. Mm-hmm. And you kind of wonder why. It's like, what's the attraction? You know, Hollywood has long lost any bit of its glamour from...
Oh, you sound so old and jaded.
Well, you know, even like 60 years
ago. Since they took down the Brown Derby, it's not the same.
That's true. Yeah. That's sad.
But
Brown Derby was a real popular swing club around here, and it had been up and running for years and years and years. And Kerr Morrison and Dean Morris.
Oh, that Derby. I mean, the Brown Derby restaurants. Those were the original restaurants that were shaped like a Derby hat.
Is that what you're talking about? Oh, yeah.
With the pictures of everyone inside.
On the celebrities on the wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the 30s and 40s, the Brown Derby, there were a few of them. They were restaurants that were built kind of like with a dome, and they built it so it had like a brim of a hat. And you'd actually see old cartoons, like at the end of Fun and Fancy Free, where Willie the Giant is walking through Hollywood looking for Mickey Mouse. He picks up the restaurant and just uses it as a hat.
How cute.
And then he steps on the people inside, crushing them to death, and walks off across the San Fernando
Valley.
That's
so cute.
You're right. The last surviving remnant of the Brown Derby was the Derby Club, which I think was one of the original Brown Derby restaurants up on Los Feliz, and you performed there. That was one of your first performances in Los Angeles.
That's right, it was
doing magic, and we would also see Dean
Morris. The mini cube on the dance floor.
That's right.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I don't know why.
You were part of the entertainment that night with Dean Morris' band and Kara Morrison singing and everything like that. So
that was a long time ago.
And that was like
the swing band that they have.
Yeah. Morris Modern Swing Tet.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, they're fabulous.
For this brief time during the mid-90s, swing was on its way back. And I'd been listening to Dean Morris music for a long time. And I would go up to the Derby and you'd see all these guys dressed in heavy wool pants and socks. Like they were going out to play golf and bow ties, doing swing dancing. And girls with...
they were looking like they wanted to get beat up.
Well, all the girls had the vintage looks with the little hats and the ruffles and the...
And they were looking like they wanted to get picked up.
Well, yeah. And they were. And they'd pick them up and they'd swing them around and they would have swing dance classes. And it would be just like, well, the war's over. We beat the Japanese and here we are ready to dance it up in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. There's a producer out here by the name of Maxwell DeMille. Mm-hmm. And Maxwell specializes in putting together retro shows. And he puts together different variety acts of all different kinds. And you've been to several of his shows. I've only been to a few. But he has a following of folks that get all dressed up in their retro garb and they'll go in 30s and 40s or whatever it is appropriate. He does all different eras.
Right.
Wears all the flapper gear. And,
Depending on whatever the evening is, you know. But Kerr said that they were all in World War II uniforms. Kerr Morrison is one of Dean Morris' singers. She's the beautiful redhead that sings with them.
Oh, yeah.
With a beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And Kerr said that they did something with World War II just the other day and they were out in the rain and they're war gear. And I said that was interesting. And she said the show went great. You know, and it always does. But Maxwell puts together these period parties.
Right.
And everybody goes in costume and they're really a hoot of a time. He gets some tremendous talent together.
Yeah, I remember one for the reopening of the Orpheum Theater. This was about 8 years ago, maybe not longer. And it was a big deal. They revived the Orpheum Theater and they did a whole night of skits and acts and music. And then to top it off, they showed a really great Harold Lloyd movie. Girl Shy.
Okay.
And which was really interesting about the movie was made like a year or two before sound came in. So I guess it was made around 27 or 28. Mm-hmm. And he plays a guy who gets so frustrated around women, so flustered, that he stutters and stammers and he can't express himself. And this is a silent movie. And Harold Lloyd is such a good actor and such an adept comedian that you never missed the fact that you couldn't hear him stutter and stammer, that it was done so well. And it had one of the greatest chases at the end. It wasn't really a chase, but it was just, he finds out he passes on the girl that, he turns down the girl he's in love with because he figures he's no good, he'll never be a success. And at the last minute, he has a change of heart and he has to go all the way from the sticks to downtown Los Angeles in like 20 minutes because she's going to get married. And every conveyance he takes to get downtown, you know, from horses to cars to streetcars to everything. And it's great. And they show this pristine copy of it and it was just absolutely beautiful. And in perfect surroundings. And that is the sort of evening I love going out for, where it has a little bit of old Hollywood class and glamour and everything, which was a direct contrast to Saturday night, where we're driving around Hollywood Boulevard and there's acre after acre of these dead-eyed skinhead guys just blah, 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 on their cell phones. And
they're
pouring
not skinheads. They're not skinheads.
But they all have this kind of fake Lex Luthor look, you know, the shaved heads.
Yeah.
And they're all yakking on cell phones, and they're all kind of standing out in front of clubs and everything, and they're just nasty and hostile looking.
And they're difficult to get around, and they cross against the light, and there's a group of girls with dresses that don't cover their behinds. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just
it's pouring
Hollywood
rain, and it's freezing cold, and I'm looking around, and it's like, for a summer's night, these people are, you know, well-dressed for it, but, you know, they would just cluster together, and all the girls are the same. They're all wearing these micro dresses that come just to under their butt,
mm-hmm.
and these sky-high heels, and they're all freezing, and I'm going like...
And interestingly enough, that sounds, like, really sexy, but it's kind of unappealing, because you see so many of them, and they all look the same, and they're all entitled, and they're all walking around with their fake tans, and they're all talking in their cell phone.
And their perfume melded into one giant scent. And...
Yes, and so you can smell them mm-hmm. before you see them. And so it was really interesting, because as we were driving, and we rounded the corner to get to Hollywood Boulevard, which is where my show was, there was this, it was what, like 37, 38 degrees in Hollywood this weekend?
Yeah, and it's pouring rain, it's freezing cold.
It's pouring rain, and there are tons of women and men dressed like that, standing outside in the rain, waiting to get into a club. And I said, what is in there? What is in there that makes that worth it?
And meantime, you know, we drive around, we drive up Second City, and there are people going up to see the show, and it's like, I guess comics are, and people who enjoy comedy are smarter because they're wearing like big duffel jackets and boots and jeans and everything like that. And they're all dressed up.
Comedy is known for comfort.
Yes, that's right. Totally. That's right. So anyway, and there was no place to park at all.
Well, and there's a lot that's typically, there's a street behind Second City. You can make a left and, you know, there's this lot right behind the building. And typically, if you park there, you can park there all day for $10.
Right.
Usually. I mean, you just, you know, you can walk up and down Hollywood Boulevard, and it's a local thing. You know, like if you know and you frequent those places, the kids that take classes at Second City and stuff will park back there. We pulled into the lot, and I asked the guy with the lightsaber waving us into the parking. I said, how much is self-park tonight? Because the month prior, we've been rooked. Mm. And the guy said, well, it's $20 to self-park. It's $15 for valet. And I said, what? That's ridiculous. Why would it cost me more to park my own car? And he was like, it is what it is. You park
here, you
don't.
Because we don't have a chance to go through your car and find an extra $5.
He wanted $30.
Well, hold on.
Oh, right, right.
So, which I thought was odd. So the guy with the lightsabers waving us in. And I said to Paul, I said, ask him how much it's going to be. And Paul says, how much is it to self-park? And the guy says, I don't know. Come on in. And I was like, oh, that can't be good.
No.
So we get up to the same guy that saw the 20 in my hand and said, oh, well, it's $20. And I said, it was posted at 10. And he goes, well, it's 20 because it's after 8:30 or whatever cockamamie rule he made up. Same guy from the last month that rooked us before. Paul pulls up to him and I said, how much is it to self-park? He says, it's $30.
What?
I said, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I said, aren't you the same shyster that told us 20 last month when it was posted at 15? And he just kind of looked at me and blinked twice. And I said to Paul, I said, no way. I said, we won't pay it. I said, can you come down? And he said, no. And I said, leave the lot. And we left the lot. And he said, you're going to be late. And I said, you know, I hate to do this to you, but can you please just drop me off at the door and go home? And he said, yes.
I mean,
and so
$30 to park.
Yeah,
I mean, you can almost buy like 4 gallons of gas.
You
for
can
that.
Buy a month parking pass within 2 blocks of the theater. A month parking pass for $30.
Yeah, and then you know you can try and take your chances on the streets near there, but then you know still have your camera and everything and your costume that we'd have to carry up. And besides, the farther you get from Hollywood Boulevard on the side streets, the more you get into the territory of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, the more dangerous it becomes.
Yeah, and the roving gangs of you know vampires and creeps that haunt that part of Hollywood. So, you know, you don't want to walk around those streets at night. I mean, I swear, it is The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah.
And it's no good.
Yeah.
You know,
those vampires moved west down Mulholland Boulevard.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Is that how they pronounce Boulevard? Boulevard?
Well, those are the tortured, you know, nice-looking vampires of the kiddie novels. These are just like, you know, the things that lurch at
these are the real things.
At you out of doorways and stuff like that. And just like, you know.
Yeah, it's not okay.
No, not okay.
Pretty creepy.
So what happened was I circled the block at least once, and then you were saying, just go home or come back for me and, you know, in 90 minutes. And and I didn't want to do that because I wanted to see the show.
And it was new material, but you'd heard the material 3 or 4 times as I was running through it for you because we had been writing. Like I ran through the material. I wrote the jokes at the top of the week because this is a great opportunity because you get a fresh audience who knows the character, but they don't know what she's going to do. And so they're familiar enough where I can figure out, you know, like I kind of know who I'm writing for. Mm-hmm. And it's a great chance for me to try out new stuff because the vaudeville guys are so relaxed. And the show is always, you know, it's always professional and fun, but it just, you know, it rolls. And so it's a really good opportunity. So every time I go, I try not to squander it. And I always take something new that I've been thinking about doing just to see if it works. And so this time she did a very simple magic trick, but I had been writing the jokes for, I think, two days prior. Mm-hmm. Actually, I wrote them that afternoon.
And did you use my herpes joke?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
I had been writing the jokes that afternoon.
Right, yes.
As I am wont to do for these things.
No, and but you keep a book and you write down Princess Magic stuff throughout the
week. I do. I have a Microsoft Word file and a couple other places where I'll write down her stuff. You know, for this, it's pretty casual. And if I know the magic trick, then the patter is very easy because it's super easy for me to improvise once I'm in her skin. And once I know what I'm going to do and what my beginning, middle, and end are, I know it's going to end with a good joke. I'll write a really good joke at the top and try to have something running, and then it's fine. But anyway, so you had heard the act a couple of times, you just hadn't seen it.
But I like being there to give support and, you know, just to be a part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are always friends of yours from Second City who I know. It's
and there were folks coming who wanted to meet you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I had a girlfriend who hadn't met Paul before coming to the show with her boyfriend and her boss and his wife. And everybody said, oh, we're looking forward to meeting Paul, too, because I had spoken so much about you. I'd worked with them earlier in the week. But they did finally get to meet you because while you were waiting, they all stuck their head and hand in the car.
After my adventure, you know. But so I had to just pull up and let you out. Mm-hmm. And you had to go into Second City. And then I had to cruise off before the cops threw me out of the loading zone, because it was really that bad. The cops were
it was really
like LAX. Cops are coming by going, move the damn car, move this, move that. And then you have to move the car around these guys who are standing there like turkeys in the rain with their mouths open on the cell phone. It's like, who are you talking to? Everybody you know is right there, you know,
trying to figure out where their party bus went.
Yeah. I mean, they're if they're not there, they're hanging like dogs out of windows going, and like I said, it's pouring rain. Why are you not home? You know, what is so important about a party that you have to be here? So I just took off, and suddenly I was Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver just cruising the lonely streets at night. And I had that theme from Taxi Driver going around in my head, that lonely guy theme. Oddly enough, mixed with the theme from the intro to the Jungle Book, Disney's Jungle Book, which is this sort of quasi-snake charmer music that I've been listening to earlier in the day. And because it's almost like I'm out in night town, I'm out in the weird jungle. And I remember going down to the street, and near the subway, there's like a herd of these women in the micro dresses all clustered together in a circle. And they look like muskox, because in the Arctic, muskox all stand in a circle, but they stand facing outward so their horns can repel attackers. And so the weaker of the herd and the babies are inside defending. They're all clustered insular, you know, like they're not going to let anybody in to their little group. And again, they're all on their phone and they're all talking to each other. And it's, what the hell is this? It's like some bizarre courtship ritual from nature, something like that, you know. I really was in the jungle, you know, and it's like, you know, bizarre primate. They're repelling anybody who came near them. They would just ignore them and everything. And the streets were alive with creatures like that. And then all the way, I look down the road, Hollywood Boulevard, and I've got this clear shot for as long as I want to go. I cannot see another car in front of me all the way to Hillhurst Street, you know, from Vine Street. And on the other side, it's a wall of cars, just people trying to get into Hollywood for no other reason, just like...
So that they can go and stand around, like Buffalo.
They can go stand around. And I later heard that they had already blocked off part of the street down by the Chinese Theater, so that was creating a little bit of delay, but... The lure of Hollywood, like every time we've gone to a club around Hollywood Boulevard, usually for like a party for
a premiere
or a movie or something like that, or birthday or something, you go into these tiny clubs, you have to get by these Frankenstein-like guards at the door, and you're shown into one tight little area where you can't, it's like being in a Vietnamese torture cell. You neither sit down nor stand up all the way. Mm-hmm. And someone's bringing food, but you won't get any. And the music, the house music is so loud, you're just sitting there, you can't even talk to somebody, and then you want to leave. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's just because I'm a geezer, you know? I don't think I'm too old for it. Well, I never was young
enough. And I'm a geezer too, I'm sorry.
I never was young enough to enjoy that in anything. Even back in Boston when I was in college, you know? the best parties took place over at somebody's apartment, you know?
Exactly. And that's the thing, because you value interpersonal and human connection. I've never been part of this culture. It is a mystery to me, like the club culture and the... I just don't understand it. I see it depicted in movies, and I see people, you know, they meet in a club or they'll... But usually life happens outside the club. Conversations happen outside the club.
Yeah.
So what's the big deal with getting into the club? I don't get what's in there unless there are cameras that you want to be photographed by, because you'll end up in People magazine because you're sitting next to a celebrity.
But every club is like this.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just the big clubs that, you know, like the Viper Room or whatever,
sure,
that would be one thing. But like, it's, you know, it's any Ma and
Pa club.
The Pink
Margarita, the Bigfoot Lodge.
Well, I remember when we...
the Blue Oyster.
Well, actually, the Bigfoot Lodge, actually, you can go over there and get a drink, and it's kind of quiet over there. Mm-hmm. I like the Bigfoot Lodge, but it's... But I remember, like, the premiere party for Clerks 2, I think it was. Again, you know, we couldn't say a word to anybody. We saw members of the cast. And when we saw Kevin Smith, we had to actually walk outside with him to the alley to say, hey, we enjoyed the movie, how are you? That sort of thing. Because, you know, there's just no chance to say anything.
Yeah, I just don't understand why. Like, why do they put those together? Why is that considered a successful premiere? When you can't talk to anybody... And you can't find anyone you know, and you just kind of wander around twice in a circle and you go home.
Well, it's Hollywooditis. I mean, because that's even spread down to Comic-Con.
Hollywooditis? It's a swollen Hollywood?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we went to that party a couple years ago.
Hollywoodectomy.
I mean, that was like, I was actually enraged when we went to that party at Comic-Con a couple of years ago. It was again, that noisy, and then they had the private area that we couldn't get into, and then the ultra, ultra private area, and then I'm just going like, it's Comic-Con. It's guys sitting around drinking beer and talking about Silver Surfer. I mean, when did this happen?
You sound like Captain Sour Grapes.
Yeah, I am.
You're like, and we couldn't get into that room, and then I couldn't hear anybody, and I'm so miserable.
What can
and
I tell you? I'm a
Hollywood.
Bitter old crank.
Hand me my teeth and my denture cream.
I'm a bitter old crank, you know?
You're like, not, though. What are you doing?
No, but it's still, okay, then I just don't go to, then I should
it's
not go to parties.
It's just not your thing.
Yeah.
You know, but be careful, because you're sitting there talking about sour grapes and you're not going to get invited anywhere. And then you're going to sit home with your arms crossed and go, man, nobody invites me anywhere.
Yeah, I guess
let's point out the good things.
I just like going.
Paul likes being invited places.
Yeah.
And then he likes to go and sit in quiet places.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have a premiere and it's going to be totally quiet, by all means, invite Paul Dini? Question mark.
I remember when we go out to places. And usually when we have nice evenings out, it's usually with another couple or two, and we go to a restaurant or something, or like in New York when we went to that little club off Broadway.
Chris and Kate, it was awesome because they're wonderful.
Yes, it was like a little private club off Broadway in New York. This was right before Christmas night.
It was a restaurant, though. It wasn't a club and it wasn't a bar. It was like a restaurant. It was a really quiet...
You had to have a reservation. You had to know people.
Well, it didn't even have the name on the outside of the place. You had to know where it was to begin with.
I just remember us walking through the door and all of us turned into Hirschfeld caricatures and we were all talking about very witty things.
It was very New York,
yeah,
yes.
Very nice. But that sort of evening out I like. Going to somebody's house, usually, or more often than not, I enjoy. But going to the club scene. And then, so I'm, you know, prowling through Hollywood... Saturday night, you know, looking for a place to go and going like, okay, now where's my place? Now where's a place I can go that I feel comfort, that I can feel some sort of relaxation, that I can really let myself, my hair down and really enjoy it.
And you went to the Museum of Death.
No, I went to the House of Pies, which is kind of the same thing.
House of Death for other people.
Yeah, House of Death for other people.
Museum of Death is for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
But I just drove over to the House of Pies and I said, House of Pies, there's a way to round out an evening.
Oh my God.
So I went in and I had it in my head. I'm gonna.
Was there thumpy house music and girls wearing sweatbands instead of skirts in there?
The little thin skirts. No. There was actually a guy dressed like looking like a secretary bird at one of the tables.
What?
There's,
why?
I don't know. You get in a House of Pies and it's sort of like an interesting cross section of people. There are people, they're like old folks who are eating supper, and then there's family.
Supper.
You know?
Gotta be old to eat supper.
Supper, yeah.
Well, it's like 5 in the evening. You gotta start.
Yeah, but this was well after midnight, and they were still eating supper.
Supper, so you said it twice.
Maybe they had fallen asleep. I'm using their word for it, not mine.
Just trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was actually, you know, like a parent or two with a kid, and again, this is after midnight. And then there's this table full of, you know, kind of freaks over and having a good time. And there's this one guy who's got like this hair that looks like an African secretary bird. They have these huge big, I don't know what they are, feathers that look like giant quills that stick out of their head. And he had this mammoth mohawk, and it was dyed weird colors. And I guess it was Birdhead's birthday because they were singing Happy Birthday. And everybody was sort of joined in. And I thought, I'm going to sit here and have a piece of pineapple pie because this is the one of the few places I know that actually makes pineapple pie. And it's good Lonely Guy pie because I'm going to have Lonely, you know.
Okay, hold on, Ezra. You were only alone for 20 minutes.
So I can indulge myself and have Lonely Guy pie.
So you have to drive up dramatically up a lonely Hollywood Boulevard and pull into House of Pies and sit and have Lonely Guy pie because you have to pick me up after my show?
I wasn't saying that I didn't enjoy it.
Are you kidding me right now?
I wasn't saying I didn't enjoy it, but you know,
Lonely Guy Pie. How melodramatic is that?
And I actually posted something about that on Twitter, and somebody said, "What is Lonely Guy Pie?" And I said, "Go into any coffee shop after midnight, order any flavor of pie, and there it is. As long as you're alone, it's Lonely Guy Pie."
When you stepped out, was there a little rain cloud that followed you?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know what it was? He opened his umbrella, and it began to rain only on him.
Yeah.
Like under his umbrella.
Tiny.
Come on.
Tiny mice would play the violin, going. You know, like
yes,
that, you
they're
know,
all doing that about your club complaining, too.
Well, okay. You know. Yeah, the only reason I'm complaining about the clubs is that I couldn't get in.
You couldn't get your... Well, but you did end up getting pie.
But I did get pie. I didn't get the one I wanted.
Oh, God.
Because I said, I'll have a piece of pineapple pie. And I was looking forward to it, too, because I was thinking, like, I'll be like Doc Ricketts in Cannery Row when he's driving down to La Jolla from Monterey.
I've only ever seen pineapple pie at a grocery store in those pre-made little mini pies that they have.
Well, you gotta look for it. Pies.
Yeah. I've never seen actual pineapple pie. I've never even heard of it.
Well, you gotta look for it because when I was a kid, I was reading Cannery Row in high school, and then Ed Ricketts, you know, the hero of the book, you know, likes pineapple.
I thought
pineapple.
You got Ricketts.
he likes pineapple pie, and I thought, I wonder where you can get that, you know. Just like the character in the book is one, at one point somebody mentions a beer milkshake and he becomes obsessed with it. Where can I get a beer milkshake? When I'm reading about him eating pineapple pie, it's like, where can I get pineapple pie?
Ever happened to me once with a Twinkie Wiener sandwich from UHF, Weird Al. I had to have one. I didn't know what it was.
Oh, was it good?
No, it wasn't.
I didn't think so. Yeah.
Well, pineapple pie is not bad. I mean, it's okay. And but I just thought House of Pies is one of the few places that has it. They're in Dupars, you know? So I go over there.
I love Dupars.
Dupars is good.
Yeah.
Dupars is over at Farmer's Market.
Yeah, you can get the gooseberry pie over there.
No, I don't. I will not get that.
No.
You can get the gooseberry pie.
Well, I went to House of Pies and they didn't have that.
Listen to Mugsy's opinion of the gooseberry pie.
Well, they didn't. So they had no pineapple pie, and she said, and we're out of peach, too. It's like, well...
Just to rub it in.
She gave me the big F you.
Yeah.
She's like, also, we're out of peach.
We're out of peach. And I said, well, do you have any chocolate cream with banana? And she goes, yeah, we got that. And it's like, that's right.
Did she have that kind of attitude?
No, she was actually... You know what? It was weird. There was a lot of attitudes, because I sit down at the counter, and there's a guy working behind the counter, but he won't take my order. And I go,
awesome.
Hi.
Awesome.
And he goes, oh, and he's counting napkins, you know. And I go, like a cup of coffee and a piece. I'll get somebody for you. And then it's like I had
made
to
me break. Lose my count of napkins.
And then
I know.
The girl came over and gave me a menu, and I don't want a menu. I know what I want. I want a cup of coffee and a piece of pie. And then I had to wait for her to take everybody else's order in the joint. And then finally she comes back, and it's like, can I have a piece of pineapple pie? We're out. And we're out of peach, too. It's like, and I began to feel like it's Monty Python. You do have cheese here, do you? Of course it's a cheese shop. And I see there is some pie over there, and I just go, you know, chocolate banana. And I know that that's Rashi's favorite because he picks out the banana and then he pretends the rest is feces and throws it. So anyway, what happened was I finished up the pie and I realized I still had about an hour and a half to pick you up.
Oh, my God.
So I drove the wet streets of Los Angeles feeling like I was in a detective novel.
And he was doing the monologue from Say Anything of John Cusack just driving his car.
Yes, and then when he stopped to pull me up, he pulled out a boombox and just stood on the street with it above his head. Yes.
Actually, I'm thinking... If I didn't have to drive back through bad traffic, I could probably make it over to Dupars and have another piece of pie. And they probably wouldn't have been sold out of the pineapple, except that would be gluttonous. So maybe I should just drive home and get my cell phone in case Misty needs me for something. So I drove home, got the cell phone, woke up the dogs, they were pissed off. And then I went back to Second City, circled the block once. Oh, yeah, that was horrible traffic trying to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then by then the show was over and you were out with your friends, and so I got to say hi to everybody, and then we drove home. Mm-hmm. What a great ripping night. But you had a great time. The show went really well.
I had a fine time.
The show went really well.
Yeah, the show was fun, and you know, I mean, we were talking about Crazy Hollywood, but when I walked into Second City, there were two guys in completely, you know, head-to-toe, three-piece suits, very gussied up, had painted their faces completely white, and they were running through their act. And they started singing Sweet Child of Mine in a cappella and smashing plates on one another's heads.
Awesome.
Awesome.
So that was my night.
You had the win.
You had pie. I had plates.
I had pie. I didn't really particularly
want. Plates, if they had pie on them, it would have topped it.
It would have just been it, you know. So there we go.
Yeah. So that was our hot night in Hollywood. Saturday night in Hollywood, man, I'll tell you. We live the life.
You're so bitter.
What?
You're so bitter. I hate clubs and I hate everybody.
I don't hate everybody.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I do get pissed off and I feel the need to rant a little bit. So that was what I was doing. Just a little bit of a rant. And if you can't rant on Radio Rashi, where can you rant on?
I guess.
All right.
Yeah, everyone, leave us some iTunes reviews. We're up on iTunes now.
Yay!
Look for us on the search bar, Radio Rashi.
Oh, Muggsy's snoring.
Yeah. And leave some comments or feedback.
As long as they're nice.
Yes, yeah. please leave us some nice comments. Let people know where we are and how to find us. And that's how everyone gets to know who we are and whether they can trust the podcast. So
let us know.
Yeah. People get pointed to the right places depending on what else they've listened to. And
Kind of like Pandora.
Yes, exactly.
News? Not yet.
And, we're out of here. Want to go to the House of Pies?
No.
All right.
God. Do you want to go to Hollywood Boulevard?
No.
All right.
Well, okay, so we're not going to our House of Pies.
Going to Hollywood Boulevard.
We could always just make pie, stay in, watch the Three Stooges, and have a pie fight.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I'm in.
Yeah. I'm in. Okay. Rashi, turn the oven on and get the bacon stuff out.
Already done. Come on in here. There's something I want to show you real close.
Oh, good. I can't wait to see.
Thanks, everyone.
On that note, we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
What? Oh! I'm a victim of circumstance.
You're a bad impressionist.